Welcome to St. James Bible Bites. This podcast was recorded live at our Sunday morning service, and the full recording can be found on our Facebook page as well as our YouTube channel, both linked on our website. We continue our series on the Sermon on the Mount, and the readings are taken from Matthew 6, 19 to 24, and from Ecclesiastes, verse 10 to 15. The talk is by the Reverend David Wilkie, entitled The Heart, the Eye and the Master.
Good morning. Our first reading is taken from Matthew chapter 6, verses 19 to 24. Do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moth and rust consume, and where thieves break in and steal. But store up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust consumes, and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will also be. The eye is the lamp of the body. So, if your eye is healthy, your whole body will be full of light. But if your eye is unhealthy, your whole body will be full of darkness. If then the light in you is darkness, how great is that darkness? No one can serve two masters, for a slave will either hate the one and love the other, or be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and love. This is the word of the Lord.
Thanks be to God.
Our second reading this morning is from the Old Testament, from the book of Ecclesiastes, reading from chapter 5, verses 10 through to 15. Ecclesiastes 5, 10 through to 15. The lover of money will not be satisfied with money, nor the lover of wealth with gain. This also is vanity. When goods increase, those who eat them increase, and what gain has their owner but to see them with his eyes? Sweet is the sleep of labourers, whether they eat little or much, but the surfeit of the rich will not let them sleep. There is a grievous ill that I have seen under the sun. Riches were kept by their owners to their hurt. And those riches were lost in a bad venture. Though they are parents of children, they have nothing in their hands. As they came from their mother's womb, so they shall go again. Naked as they came, they shall take nothing for their toil, which they may carry away with their hands. This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God.
Thank you, Martin. Good morning, everyone. My name's Dave. If I don't know you, it's a pleasure to be here. Do you know you've got two fathers of four leading and preaching this morning? And it's Father's Day. I mean, that's a bit of a bad deal, isn't it? You say that, though, mine are very young. Mine are all under eight, and there's a one-year-old at home. And my wife was struggling, well, she was nearly getting ready to go to church this morning, to come here. And she's just texted me to say that it's not happening. We had lentil curry last night. And it's homemade, very nice lentil curry, but it has come out all over this one-year-old. And he's now in the bath. And so, yeah, it's those moments when you're leaving the door, and you're thinking, I've got this in hand, and it all goes up. So I don't know what life stage you are at this morning, but that's where I'm at. I'm here preaching with you. My wife is dealing with that at home. So, that's life, isn't it? And sometimes for Father's Day, it's a hard day for some. We remember those we've lost. For others, it's a time of thanksgiving to actually stop and think, wow, I am a dad. Because life just passes us by, doesn't it? It goes so fast. I am a dad, and I can rejoice in that. So this morning, we're talking about whose eyes are on you, and who or what are your eyes on? What is your master? And it's all about eyes this morning. Now, this week, I was driving to school on the school run. It's a 8:30 every morning. I bundle them into the car, and off we go. And I realized that I get hit with this same message every morning in the car. I don't know what it is about Taunton, but it's like a radio black hole for BBC programs. I don't have a fancy DAB radio in my car, and so there's no FM, Radio 1, 2, whatever. There's just heart radio in my car, that is it. And so that always comes on, and the girls love the songs when it eventually gets to them. But I am hit with this every morning. Sorry, a bit loud.
This is the heart. Show me the money song.
At 8:30 every morning, I'm getting into the car, and it is hitting me, this idea that I have to text in for £2 to win some money. And every day that money changes. Sometimes it's 2,000, sometimes it's 15,000. And if you text in, someone at random gets picked, and then you're asked a question. Now, do you want to keep this 2,000 money? Or do you want to shout out, show me the money, and potentially get 50,000? So it could go up or it could go down. Some people it goes down to like 500. And you're like, ugh. But this message, this game show hits me every morning. I'm thinking, what would I do if I'd won 15,000? Would I gamble it for the 50? Or would I go for less? Or if it was, what's my cutoff? Maybe it's 4,000. Maybe at 4,000 I say, no thanks. I'll keep it. I wonder what you... But it doesn't matter. Does it matter? Do you know, thousands of people text in, and this happens multiple times a day, and it's on the school run coming home as well. This happens multiple times a day where you're hit with this message that you don't have enough money. And it's a lottery, right? They're making a huge profit off this. If 2,000 people text in £2, then you've made your money every show, and it builds, and when they go for the £1 million jackpot, loads of people text in. It's a huge money maker. But this hits me every morning. I wonder what effect that has on my very being. By starting the day and thinking, oh, I wonder if I could have a bit more money. What would I do with it? Maybe I should switch off the radio station. But my, yes, yeah, that would be easier. Or someone buy me a nice car, that would be good. So this guy, James Smith, he's a book, it's called What You Are What You Love, and it's The Spiritual Power of Habit. And we realize, like a lot of our habits, we don't even realize what they are. He says that your subconscious, your unconscious thought, is 95% of your activity. So if you imagine yourself as an iceberg, they used to say the tip of the iceberg is your conscious critical thinking in your day. And the rest is kind of automated. It's been put into your subconscious. Actually, scientists and philosophers, psychologists now think it's more like a snowball on top of an iceberg. At least that's what it feels like for me. When I said this to my wife, Donna, she was like, I can see that for you. Yeah, for me, no. I'm far more critical. I can see things that are happening, and she is. Me, I just feel like I'm on autopilot a lot of the time. I'm dictated by the diary or what's happening. And this happens, isn't it? Do you remember when you were learning to drive? I know there is a driving instructor here this morning. And at the back, hi, Bill. And when you were learning to drive, it felt like everything was so hard. The pedal, the gear lever, the steering wheel, the mirrors, the instructions coming from the instructor. It felt like your mind was going to melt with all the instructions coming in. It was really hard work. You're stalling, all these dials, what's going on? The radio. And then after a while, you'd start to train yourself. And then after a while, maybe you've gone to work, you've gone to a friend's house, and suddenly you find yourself back at home in your driveway, and you don't even realize how you've got there. You've just been on autopilot. You haven't thought once about what your hands are doing, what your eyes are doing, what's happening. You're in the zone. It's in your subconscious. And what we think is that a lot of our habits, a lot of how we live our lives, it's actually in our subconscious. When you walk into places like a shopping mall or a shop, they're not trying to hit you with intellectual arguments to buy things. They're trying to hit you with subconscious feelings, how it feels to be there, the space, the smells, that it's all engineered. How does it feel that makes you want to partake, makes you want to go in, participate into this cathedral of consumerism? It's all subconscious, and it's how we're programmed. So James Smith calls these things liturgies, the secular liturgies of our world. And we all know about liturgies. This morning we sang, I love you more than any other, so much more than anything. When we repeat that enough, it's like a liturgy, isn't it? It goes into us. I love you more than any other. It goes in, and that's why we come to church, to hear that message. But then we go out, and do we hear it again the rest of the week? How else are we being programmed? Is it subconsciously through radio programs that I wasn't even clued into? So in this, you said it was a bit like a fancy novel, the title. Here is the Saruman's eye from the Lord of the Rings, the evil eye that is all-seeing, this intellectual being who can see everything. And there's two ways of looking at the phrase, the lamp of the body. The eye is the lamp of the body. Now, it was a famous saying in those times that there was a phrase, the good eye. Now, the good eye was one that was a generous eye, one that saw with generosity. And there was the evil eye that saw with a stinginess and ungenerosity. And it repeats itself throughout the Bible. We've got Proverbs 28:22, and the evil eye is eager for wealth. Or we've got the parable of the hired laborers, when Jesus employs all the laborers throughout the day, and then they come to collect their money at the end, and those who've worked the longest get the same as those who worked the least. And then they complain, they're like, this is not good. And Jesus replies, is it not lawful for me to do what I will with my own generosity? Is thine eye evil because I am good, says the King James Version. So this idea of the evil eye and the good eye is throughout the Bible. You will look, what you look for, you will find. What you look for, you will find. If you're looking for the weakness, the faults, the mistakes of other people, guess what you will find? The weakness, the faults, the mistakes of other people. It's obvious, isn't it, really? If you're looking with a critical eye at everything and thinking, actually, I want to tear this person down. But if you're looking with a good eye, with a generous heart, another translation for a good eye is a single focus, a single devotion to God. Now, there's nothing more pure than a baby's eye when they're doing that baby stare at you, aren't they? They're just like beholding you and thinking, wow, I'm going to copy everything you do. And that's this idea of what we're to have with God. It's just to look and go, wow. It's that generous eye. Are we looking at the world through generous eyes this morning? Are we looking for the good in people? Or are we looking for their faults? In 2 Corinthians 8, Paul says, now, brothers and sisters, we want you to know about the grace that God has given the Macedonian churches. In the midst of a very severe trial, their overflowing joy and their extreme poverty welled up in rich generosity. For I testify that they gave as much as they're able and even beyond their ability. It's so easy in times of severe trial, when things are not going well, it's just to shut down, to see the world and think, no thanks. To shut down and think, I will hold on to what I've got, and I'll count every penny, and I will not open my arms to what's going on. It's so easy to be that. But he says, look at their overflowing joy and their extreme poverty is welled up in rich generosity. This is the idea of a good eye. Now, one reflection I had was when I was in year 9. We were out in Tunisia for a while. My dad worked in oil and gas. And we were out there at an international school and the education couldn't really take me. I was falling behind. So the company paid for me to go to a private school called Dollar Academy up in Scotland. And I was up there for 3 years. When I got there, I'd realized what a sheltered life I'd had. It was a huge difference getting there. And suddenly, all the kids were like in designer labels. There was this thing called perfume. It was like, at Christmas, everyone came back saying, "Where'd you go on your skiing holiday?" There's this sudden wealth in my face. And I'm there in my tracksuit bottoms and fleece going like, "What? Like, how do I fit in here?" I totally looked at myself as a 15-year-old and went, "Oh man, I've got to sort this out somehow. I'm nothing compared to these people. Look at their wealth. Look at, you could just tell it was just pouring from them. The holidays they were taking, the trainers they were wearing. You're turning up to PE and Nike Air Max and all this kind of stuff. And just like all their stuff they had. I just looked at it and was, wow." And those were some of my most formative years. And I reckon that had a huge impact on how I see myself and the fight that I have now on what I do with my money and my self-worth. Because God doesn't care about that kind of stuff. He sees the heart. He sees the boy inside, the girl inside. He sees us struggling. And yet when we see young people or us, like Facebook has a massive hold over my generation and the younger generation. Maybe not so much the younger generation, they're kind of unplugging from it. Facebook is a fad that's fading, fortunately. But there's other things like TikTok and Snapchat and all this thing. Anyway, it's programmed to be addictive. It's programmed to make you look at other people and compare yourself and think, "I'm not good enough. I need to be more like this person." It's engineered to keep you looking, to keep you scrolling, keep you thinking, keep you programming, keep your habitual flicking and thinking, "I'm not good enough. I need more. I need that money. I need that affirmation from others. I need something." So there is another idea to this lamp of the world. Now bear with me, because this gets a bit, I think a bit different. So we've got intromission, and this is how you see things. So the eye is an amazing, amazing organ. So photons come from the sun. They reflect off things, and they give off different colors, and they go into our eye, it detects it. We've got an incredible eyes. And we can see light, and what is going in is a huge part of this message. If your eye is the lamp of the body, what is going in? Because, Jesus says, what goes in must come out. What goes into your eyes, what you're absorbing, or your ears, will inevitably come out of your heart, which means it comes out of your mouth. It comes out of how you see the world. You can't help it. How your heart is feeling will come out. It's so easy to think, "I can be guarded. I'm not going to say these things." But your very body language portrays that lie, doesn't it? Like, you can't help it. So if darkness is going in, if we're constantly dwelling on things like, "I don't have enough," then how do we react to people that you see have more? If you're constantly thinking, "I'm not good enough," how are you reacting to people around you? Are you shedding light or darkness? What's coming out of you? So this is the classic way of how we see it now. Intromission, light coming into us. There's also this idea of the lamp, the eye is the lamp of the body. Now, before science and these other ideas, we had this idea of extramission. Now, this is a freaky theory. It's like Superman with his laser eyes. Okay, the belief was that the very fact that we can see is because your eyes are emitting light. They are a lamp of the body. Now, this thought was around in Jesus' time. It was around in the Greek philosophy. Plato believed it. It was around in the Middle Ages. There was debates raging all the time. If you need proof, look at cat's eyes. In the dark. They're freaky, aren't they? They emit light. We now know they've got reflective bits inside their eyes. They reflect the light. But back then we thought, wow, there's this light coming from this cat. And there's this light coming from your eye. The fact that you can see is because you are emitting light. Now, it feels crazy to us, but it was the belief then. And then this sheds another aspect on this idea that the eye is the lamp of the body. Because you are giving out light. Like I said, you are giving it out. So what you've taken in, you are giving out. So if we look on the world with lust, we're giving that out as well. We might say we demand equality for women, but if we're looking at pornography or other things like that, that's not the case, is it? We might say, like, you know, all these things that are on our surface, like, oh, I don't look at women in that way. But if we take a second or a third glance, we are, and it's changing our very being. And it's so easy to do that now on mobile phones and all sorts of devices. But God has created you perfectly. You are made in God's image. And there is a Father that loves you very, very much. Often we don't hear that message. We think we're not good enough, or we need something extra. And this is why, again, we are at church on a Sunday morning, is to hear that there is a God who loves us, that cares for us, and sent his very Son to be here on earth with us, to die for us, even though we're still sinners, to suffer and die on the cross for us. So whose eyes are looking at you? If you believe in a world that is just numbers, statistics, you're just a consumer, then it's AI, it's the algorithms, it's the technology that's looking at you and seeing digits and thinking, how am I going to get this person to spend more money? How am I going to get this person to spend more time on this screen? How am I going to get this person to buy this product? All these things are flooding you. Those are the eyes that are on you. But we can choose to have a different pair of eyes on us. Now, this is Jesus from the Chosen series. I don't know if you've seen it, but it's a wonderful, wonderful series. Think of Jesus as a mentor, sitting down and explaining to you the best way to live this life. He's looking at you now, and he says the words this morning, that no one can serve two masters. Often we think that is coming from a strict teacher or a father figure that's all powerful and is like scary. But imagine Jesus as a mentor who wants the best for you. He sits opposite you and says, look, no one can serve two masters. It's not possible. He's trying to save you from being torn apart. If you're going this way, down this road, trying to gather more money, more approval, more whatever it is that you need, then you're not going towards Jesus that is full of grace and love and mercy and compassion and gentleness. Instead, you know, we're being torn apart. By driving along in that car and listening to the radio station, my inner being is being torn apart, yet I don't realize it. It's all subconscious. It feels extreme, but unless we wake up to the culture that is around us and react to it, I don't know what I'm going to do now. Maybe play worship music or something in the car, or listen to some thought of the day. Radio 4, and oh, no, it's a BBC Black Hole, isn't it? I don't know. Something different, but my kids love the music, so we'll see. So whose eyes are set on you? Now to finish with, I want to read you a part of Gregory Boyle's Tattoos on the Heart book. Here's a picture of it. The Power of Boundless Compassion. This is a Jesuit priest who worked in LA. And there's this wonderful story, and because it's Father's Day, I want to leave you with this image. My touchstone image of God comes by way of my friend and spiritual director, Bill Kane. Years ago, he took a break from his own ministry to care for his father as he died of cancer. His father had become a frail man, dependent on Bill to do everything for him. Though he was not physically not what he had been, and the disease was wasting him away, his mind remained alert and lively. In the role reversal common to adult children who care for their dying parents, Bill would put his father to bed and then read him to sleep, exactly as his father had done for him in childhood. Bill would read some novel, and his father would lie there staring at his son, smiling. Now, Bill was exhausted from the day's care and work and would plead with his dad, "Look, here's the idea. I read to you, you fall asleep." Bill's father would impishly apologize and dutifully close his eyes. But this wouldn't last long. Soon enough, Bill's father would pop open one eye and smile at his son. Bill would catch him and whine, "Now come on. I know how this feels when I'm reading to my girls in the evening. I'm like, come on, let's get on with it." The father would again oblige until he couldn't anymore, and the other eye would open to catch a glimpse of his son. This went on, and after his father's death, Bill said that this evening ritual was really a story of a father who just couldn't take his eyes off his kid. How much more so of God? Auntie DeMello writes, "Behold the one beholding you and smiling." Behold the one beholding you and smiling. What's true of Jesus is true for us. And so this voice breaks through the clouds and comes straight at us. "You are my beloved, in whom I am wonderfully pleased." There is no conviction in Christ. There is grace. And he loves you like a father, smiling at you as you try your best. So throughout this rest of the service, as we take communion, as you go for prayer ministry, it will be available at the back and in the chapel after the service. Try and see God as that father who is smiling, who wants what is best for you, and gives you these instructions, not to squash you, not to cram you into his mold, but for what's best of you as a loving father who wants the best for you. Amen.
For more Bible Bite podcasts, simply visit our website, www.stjamestaunton.co.uk, and click on resources. Thank you for listening, and may God be with you today.